The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly, look out, here's more football. Controversial Chelsea clash sees Liverpool racing through the gears, first to fifth in no time at all. Arsenal go back on top, Man U win again, while at the KC it's Hull 6, London 0, as Fulham's enthusiasm gets curbed. There's Cardiff's boardroom malaise, part 94, as Mackay says bye-bye. Who'll be next at the Bluebirds? Producer Ben asks, will it be Phil Brown? Because he works well with a tan. We look forward to the New Year's Day action, Man United, Spurs, and a host of battles at the bottom in this Football Weekly. It's the final part of 2013, and you can bet we've brought out the big guns for this one. Marcus Christensen.
Good morning.
Head of the stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. His minion, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Freelance opinionista, James Saucy Pirate Horncastle.
Hello.
And moi, a new listener, welcome on board. Bingo, what are we going to talk about first? Is it Chelsea-Liverpool?
Why not?
Yeah, go
Why
on.
Not?
Big guns at Stamford Bridge. Howard Webb had a shocker. Is that the main thing about this game? Or Chelsea striker scoring? Or what would you go with, Marcus?
Well, I think they should have had a penalty each, probably. Mm. So I don't think that would have altered the results much. And I think Eto'o could have been sent off. But I don't think a lot of referees would send anyone off for that tackle in the third minute. It's a strange one. I mean, I think they could have done in the 87th, but they seem a bit weary, not trying to decide the game in the third minute.
Mm.
So,
if you're going to make a rough tackle, do it in the first 5 minutes.
Absolutely, yeah. As Eto'o clearly knows. Mm. So he did it, and then he did one in the 87th as well in the penalty area, but that's a different matter. I think Chelsea were better, and I think, like I said, penalty each, but Chelsea won, deservedly so.
They certainly did. Mourinho, typically classy in victory afterwards.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed his post-game comments.
It's unbelievable the hypocrisy he kind of showed. Very condescending and patronising towards Brendan Rodgers. But to say, you know, that he sees it only one way, when clearly Mourinho is only seeing it one way, which is the Chelsea way, thinking that Hazard should have had a penalty and that Suarez, he said afterwards that he dived as though he was diving into a swimming pool.
His wild nature was re-emerging in defeat.
Yeah, which is absurd when you think of the Chelsea West Brom game when was it Ramirez got that penalty which saved the result late on. It's just casting himself, presenting himself as this protector of British football. Unbelievable.
He seemed to pull off the quite impressive fact of being totally hypocritical while sort of admitting, yes, I'm being hypocritical, because he conceded that, you know, I'm from Portugal where diving is ingrained, and we all remember his Porto Champions League winning team being just awful when it came to misbehaving and time-wasting and diving and whatnot. But apparently it's okay to do it there, and it's okay to do it in South America, but doing it here in the UK is just not on. Mm. But his players still do it anyway, so...
Yeah.
But, you know, managers are always one-eyed like that, and it's kind of a bit unfair to single him out in particular.
Yeah, although I would suggest he is the worst offender. What about Simon Mignolet? Is it all his fault?
Well, they don't have a squad to equal, say, Manchester City's or Chelsea's, just in terms of resources, and their players are probably a bit knackered. Mignolet has been excellent for a season and a half, but he's been poor in the last two games. The Eto'o goal, he just should have saved it, simple as that. It was a very soft one to let in. And he is a good goalkeeper, but goalkeepers have a habit of going through bad patches. I mean, it could be argued Liverpool played quite well in both games that they've lost over the Christmas period, and I think they could have taken a point from each.
I think it just shows that they have no settled back four whatsoever. And you look at Arsenal, and that's been the main thing for them, and that's why they're doing so well. And I know Rodgers have had injuries, but he hasn't decided. Is it Sacco? Is it Skrtel? Is it Agger? Who is it really? And obviously, the fullback's injuries again. But there's no sense that there is a settled back four, and it can't be that easy to be goalkeeper behind that.
Hmm.
Which has been an issue for City as well, no, with all the chopping and changing there. Sacco now out for an extended period?
It looked like it. I haven't seen the latest, but it was a hamstring injury, I think. So, I mean, Liverpool's bench was very inexperienced yesterday.
They had a 16-year-old on the bench. They brought on the 19-year-old Brad Smith, who I think had a difficult time.
A torrid time. A torrid introduction.
A baptism of fire.
Absolutely.
Do we think Sacco foresaw this hamstring injury and then swapped his shirt at halftime just because he knew he wouldn't be on the field at the end of the game?
He probably felt it in the 40th minute and thought, might as well get it over with.
Right. There was a lot of hand-wringing and weeping and wailing over the shirt-swapping incident where he swapped with Eto'o going off at halftime, and it does look a bit pathetic, really. But, you know, it's not the end of the world either, but it is, it's quite unseemly, especially when you're losing and, you know, it's like, oh, I admire you so much, please can I have your shirt, opponent who's beating me.
Indeed. What, next up for Liverpool?
Can I have your shirt, Jimbo? Not right now. I'll give you my cardigan.
No, only when the competitive phase of our relationship is over.
Okay.
And then we can respect each other as adversaries and exchange a token of our clash.
Okay.
But for now, Barry, you must remain there in your shirt and I remain here in mine.
I reckon my shirt's more expensive than yours.
Just between part one and part two.
No, that's no good. I tell you who might be swapping shirts soon, and that's Juan Mata, because with Eden Hazard in that kind of form, Mata's role has become increasingly peripheral to Chelsea. Of course, you've got Hazard and the others to factor into that mix. Is Marcus, from your position, very much at the centre of the Guardian's network of contacts and info sources, where's Mata going to go in January?
I don't think he's going to go.
Really?
I don't think he's going to go.
But surely his World Cup place depends on him getting some playing time, etc.
Yeah, but there are a lot of players having their World Cup places depending on whether they play or not, and I don't think Chelsea care at all. They want backups.
So they just won't let him go, you think?
I can't see it.
Because PSG supposedly are coming in with a big offer. There's a lot of talk in Italy about Inter maybe making a move for him. And, of course, they've got that excellent Freddy Guarin heading to Stamford Bridge.
To possibly swap him. But
if they get someone in, then it changes things. But I can't see them letting anyone, not Ashley Cole, going to Real Madrid either. They need the whole squad, I think. And Mourinho has been going on about this and saying how Liverpool have benefited from not playing in Europe and stuff like that. So they, unless they get someone in, they won't let anyone go.
Mm. Is Mata the type who's likely to stamp his feet and agitate for a move? Or because if he did that, perhaps he could try and force one through. I'm just curious. I genuinely don't know much about the man.
I think he conducted himself very well in the summer, didn't he? And there's a lot of speculation about his future there. And then we didn't hear much about much from him or his camp. He didn't seem to be agitating for a move, or even though it did seem to be difficult with him and between him and Mourinho in terms of, you know, his place in the team.
Were some suggestions he would go to Man United? That would be really freaky because he looks just like Wayne Rooney and you'd have the two of them running around. Can you imagine the confusion? I can't. Eden Hazard, he's looking really great, isn't he?
He is. Yep. Yeah, I think. And it was interesting to see the kind of the front three behind Eto'o, and you wonder, do they actually need a striker scoring?
Yeah.
Maybe not. Arsenal. I mean, do they need only Giroud?
I don't know.
Working so far.
Well, we'll come on to them shortly. Just mentioned that midweek Chelsea will be taking on Southampton down at St Mary's. Not an easy game, that one.
They lost at St Mary's last season, didn't they?
Oh, good knowledge, James.
2-3-1.
Have Southampton, have they begun to get their bits back? Been decimated by injuries. But are the pieces beginning to get reassembled for Pochettino now?
I think they're going to be solidly mid-table. I think they didn't look that great at Everton yesterday. Everton are really good. But I think Southampton will probably not go up to fourth, fifth again. I think they're a very good side, but mid-table.
I mean, they still have some critical injuries. You think of Wanyama, you think of the goalkeeper position. They seem to be going through, obviously, Boric's out. They go from Gazzaniga to Kelvin Davies. Talking about a World Cup, someone playing for his place.
Were you providing your own comedy sound effects there?
I did. I just
Southampton goalkeeper.
Banged my mug.
If only we had a kazoo here.
It's quite good, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah. All right. And in the meantime, Liverpool are hosting Hull. Boy, predict at your peril what Hull are going to produce in any given game. How about that 6-0 against Fulham, Barry?
Yeah, 6 second half goals, which was quite remarkable. An astonishing collapse by Fulham, who would be obviously very, very concerned by that. But and Huddleston is brilliant. What a player. I think he's really one of the players of the season.
Well, apparently now he's now nailed on for an England place.
Well, I wouldn't go that far yet, but...
But everyone's saying he's got to go to Brazil. Is that right? Is it really?
Well...
Because he's got 2 feet. That largely seems to be the argument.
2 feet and will have increasingly less hair.
Yeah, he'll be more aerodynamic.
He'll be more aerodynamic and better able to deal with the humidity.
Right. Well, as I understand it, but that's a very good point. The other thing is that it's very hot, so people won't run very much. So the fact that he's incredibly slow, glacially paced, won't matter so much. That seems to be most people's argument. Have I got that right, Marcus?
Well, Steve Bruce said so on Saturday.
Well, there you go.
We'd have a midfield duo of Carrick and Huddleston.
Right.
It is a former Spurs midfield, isn't it?
Yeah. But, very good shot.
Yeah.
Would that be the most ponderous midfield in international football history?
I don't know. But anyway,
Depends on who Denmark had next to Jan Mølby, I guess, in the 80s. Lerby, was it? Or he's pretty quick.
So now, in the rather more immediate future for, as I say, for Huddleston, is this trip to Anfield. But a little word on Fulham. Molenstein, right? That's now 6 games for him, 18 goals conceded. Is he doing a bit badly?
It's looking awful, actually, really awful.
Or is it only one game they've been doing badly? Because the narrative seemed to be that he'd come in and given them a real burst of life and enthusiasm, but actually the results are not great.
No, they've had some tricky games, obviously, but I think coming up as well, and they're playing West Ham this week, and that's a huge... I think you'd be able to
Sunderland next after that. Oh,
really? Well. So yeah. They're playing the other two bottom three sides in their next 2 games? Mm. Must-win fixtures, I'm going to call them.
Yeah, must win for everyone involved. So.
That's 2 6-pointers, that's 12 points in the next kind of 2 games.
Right. And what are we to make of all the kind of off-the-field stuff happening with the Cottagers at the moment? Previously, they had Martin Jol and brought Molenstein in to help him, and then Jol went and Molenstein took over. And now Kerbishi's come in and... I'd put money on him basically doing a similar thing to Molenstein by the end of the season, wouldn't you? And now Ray Wilkins might be joining the throng.
It's a shambles.
Is it?
I think it is, actually. And I know someone who, when they got rid of Martin Jol, just said straight away they'll go down.
Right.
I kind of like their management recruitment strategy. It seems to be give someone time to bed in.
Right.
And then integrate them. So, you know, we've seen Mullenstein got a couple of weeks to bed in. He then got the job. Maybe Kerbishley will do that now. And then Wilkins.
Right.
It's just like, you know.
But they must have somebody lined up for the post-Wilkins, which will come around March, I think, at the way they're going. I mean, this is pure conjecture on our part. Maybe it's going to be a dream team with Kerbs pulling the strings. I find that funny as well, because his thing, and the way he exited West Ham, somewhat acrimoniously, was all about the fact that he is a manager... didn't get on with the club having a sporting director, a technical director, whatever, making the transfer decisions. Mm. And now he's come in as that figure over the manager.
I think your philosophy might change depending on the period you're without a job. So I think the longer
with
you
a job,
go without a job,
he had a good job, Marcus. He had a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you're at the top and like Mark Hughes used to be and other people, you make those calls and you say, well, I'm too good for this. Mm. And then when you don't get any offers, you might rethink and think, well, I'm not too good for this.
Uh-huh.
That's how I work.
Absolutely. Now, producer Ben's had enough of part one. He's going to play some music and then we'll see if he fares any better with part two featuring Man City Palace. Barry, how was your Christmas?
How was my Christmas?
Yeah, yeah.
It was quiet, just at home with the folks.
Right.
I think my total booze intake on Christmas Day was a rather feeble 1 glass of red wine with dinner. And our television wasn't working because the aerial was broken. So had to talk to each other.
Good. Did you play games?
No. Oh. No. We. What did we do? Yeah, just sat around.
All right. Were there any... Was the afternoon disturbed by any emergency vet call-outs or anything like that?
No, my pop wasn't on duty.
Oh,
One of his minions would have been in charge.
So. Right. That's a shame, because it would have made a great kind of story at this point.
I can make one up.
No, don't worry.
A horse fell into a ditch and nearly drowned.
I was hoping we
had to winch him out.
Stuff.
Pardon?
No, I'll move on. How about Man City Palace, which you won't have seen because you were travelling back from Ireland? I made a point of watching this because I was quite excited to see what Tony Pulis, Waggers in a Circle, would do at the Etihad, and he almost pulled it off.
Yeah. I thought they were extremely impressive, really, really good. And I don't know whether there was City being tired and kind of underestimating them, but Palace were excellent, I thought.
Funnily enough, they were pretty good in a similar vein away to Man United at the start of the season before a ridiculous penalty kind of undid all their hard work. Less good from a Palace point of view was Cameron Jerome's knee in the face for Joe Hart, which I thought was extremely unnecessary. I don't want to be judgmental on this, but it did look like he didn't make any effort to avoid putting the knee into Hart's cranium.
But you have to kind of commend Hart
absolutely.
After that, because he played practically the entire game unsighted, didn't he?
Yeah.
And one of the saves that he pulled off was top draw, absolute top draw.
And Jedi-like.
A little, yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't see anything.
He
felt the ball.
But, I mean, Palace had so many chances. Yeah. You think of Puncheon testing him from outside the area. Mm. You think of Ward, Jedinak. And as you referenced the United game earlier in the season, they were very good at Stamford Bridge not too long ago as well. They're the most upwardly mobile of the teams in the bottom.
It's a big call, James.
In the bottom three, I think, because they're out of it.
Mm.
And then, yeah, they've got a big six-pointer, another one. I mean, this week coming through, this set of fixtures coming through really is about the relegation battle, isn't it, in some respects? Because there are a number of games involving teams among the bottom.
Sunderland are playing Villa, which is another biggie.
We'll come on to the relegation scraps in a second. First, quick word on the team at the top. Again, Arsenal, they've just gone back. A lot of people commenting about our last pod, actually, that we just talk too much about Arsenal, that we're very Gunner-centric as a podcast. But we do have to mention the fact that they went back on top with a game that looked like another big test of their credentials and their character and all that kind of thing. Going to St James's, Newcastle on a great run of form, winning there without Ozil, without Ramsey, and without Giroud in particularly good form either.
Mm. No, I thought it was very impressive. Not the way they played, but to go there. I mean, Newcastle are playing great football at the moment, really good, and to pick up 3 points was maybe the result of the weekend, even.
Mm. All right, and it's between those three now, is it? Arsenal, who are 1 point ahead of Man City, who are 1 point ahead of Chelsea?
I would think so.
Yeah, fair enough.
I thought Newcastle probably worth the point in that game. Yeah. I thought they played quite well, and Arsenal would probably consider themselves quite lucky to leave with all 3 points.
Mm.
The thing is, Newcastle didn't create that much. They had lots
Neither
of ball.
Neither team did, to be fair.
Arsenal are really good defensively this year, I think. And Szczesny, apart from almost scoring that embarrassing, well, hitting it against Remy end, that was the only really, really good chance Newcastle had.
That's not the first time he's done that this season. In fact, it's not even the second, and possibly not the third time.
Could it be the fourth?
Done that. I think it may well have been the fourth. But I remember watching a game out of BT Sport Towers with my close personal friend, former Arsenal goalkeeper Bob Wilson.
Right.
And he's very mild-mannered and very nice, but he was absolutely furious with Szczesny's carelessness in dealing with, say, back passes where he's trying to flick them over incoming strikers or whatever and almost getting caught out. So he was lucky yesterday, and it's not the first time, as I've already pointed out, that he's been lucky like that. And, you know, he probably deserves to get punished for that kind of casualness at some point.
Well, it could even be on New Year's Day when Arsenal will be hosting Cardiff, who, of course, have just checked. Well, that was since our last show, wasn't it, that they got rid of Malky Mackay. And there is this stat going around. I'm not sure if it's absolutely true. I would really like it to be that with Mackay going from Cardiff, Arsene Wenger has now been in place longer than the other 19 Premier League managers put together.
I'd say so. That's probably the case. Sure, isn't Pardew next longest?
Right.
3 years
three
or something.
3 years, yeah. So. Yeah, so that makes sense. Ish. Anyway, Arsenal hosting Cardiff. And Cardiff, what's the timescale on them getting a new man in?
I heard that the reason why Malky Mackay went was because they'd lined up his successor. But that successor might not be available until the end of January.
Ooh. Who is that successor?
Well, all the indications are is that it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
All the print media say it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and all the online new media seem to say he's ruled himself out of the job.
Well, again, he's been long linked with this job, and we thought he'd ruled himself out in that he didn't want to work for such an unstable club, perhaps, you know, because I think Ferguson advised him when he did go into management that that was the most important thing when picking a club to go and work for, and he can't say that's the case at Cardiff, can you, with Tan?
Hasn't Sven-Goran Eriksson been linked with the job as well?
Of course he has.
And you could sort of imagine him not being particularly fussed about eccentricities of his chairman or owner.
Well, you could say, having worked for Thaksin at City, he's probably well prepared for a job like this.
Those bozos at West Brom, Notts County, that time he was there. Mm. So, yeah, I don't think stability is top of his list of concerns.
Well, I believe, or producer Ben suggests that he's actually ruled himself out. So, producer Ben.
Right.
I don't think he was ever in the frame, with all due respect.
I didn't think Sven was in a position to rule himself out of anything.
You've heard that he is absolutely penniless.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, he said so. Penniless, and we don't know how much his book has brought in, which I was not a stereotype given by my mom for Christmas.
Ah.
Yeah. So it's nice. So it's lying unread. Yeah.
The extracts were outstanding.
Have you got the Norwegian version?
Sadly not.
Because that's the one with all the stuff in it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why it is about Norway that they're able to... Maybe they have different laws.
Which might not be very good at editing books or reading emails or knowing which parts to take out.
Right.
It's an absolutely heroic effort on Sven's part to have accumulated as much money as he has in payoffs and whatnot over the years and still be penniless.
Yeah.
Didn't his advisor and friend rip him off?
That's right. Anyway, Cardiff, we're still no clearer, sorry listeners, about who's going to be taking over. And in the meantime, a 2-2 draw with your Sunderland, one of the highlights of which Georgina Turner tweeted was Jamie Redknapp's comment, "There are two sides to every story, no two ways about it."
Right.
Interesting game?
I enjoyed it.
You've got to be impressed by Sunderland's spirit.
I was impressed by the spirit. To be honest, I fully expected them to win. And was rather deflated then when they went 2-0 down and it looked to have got beyond them. But, yeah, they showed fight to get back in the game, equalised in injury time, and I think it's a huge point for them, obviously, but as is every point they can pick up. But they're now unbeaten in five. They're playing Villa next. Villa are pretty abject at the moment. I actually bet on Crystal Palace to beat Villa on Stephen's Day or Boxing Day, as it's called here in the UK. And that came in eventually.
Right.
But they were a decent price to beat Villa. And I wasn't quite sure why, because Villa are appalling at the moment, and this, remember, is the Villa team that you claim I tip to be champions of the Premier League.
You're confusing me with another podcast presenter. I never made any such claim.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
No, I was present. It was Max.
Oh, was it Max?
Rushton.
Oh,
yeah. Sorry, Max.
Max and I had our Christmas party yesterday.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Tell us, Barry.
Oh, it was just me and Max in the pub. I had 3 pints and that was it. We went home.
All right.
Very rock and roll.
No celebrity friends?
No celebrity chums, no nothing. We watched the Newcastle-Arsenal game, had a couple of pints and then went our separate ways. The least rock and roll party I've ever attended.
Nothing requiring a microwave or anything like that?
Belonging to Trevor Nelson, no.
All right then. Cardiff owner Vincent Tannen has apparently informed the club's board that he prefers... This is the thing. He's got rid of Mackay after telling him he won't spend a penny, if you excuse the expression, in January. But Nowell announced that the new bloke's going to have bundles of cash to spend. In a kind of fit of pique, he said, not only am I getting rid of you, Mackay, but I'm going to give your replacement lots of money. Ha! How about that? I'm warming to Tan with every passing
day. You love him. He's great entertainment. Like, he's box office for all of us, assuming you're not a Cardiff fan. But apparently he was criticising David Marshall, the goalkeeper, for not scoring enough goals.
Ah.
And he also reportedly told a journalist yesterday, he didn't realise he was talking to journalists, he was complaining about how much they'd wasted on Cornelius, so the striker.
Yeah, so, in inverted commas, yeah.
I'm just wondering if the way he kind of turns up for matches, does he stand in front of the mirror and think, yeah, that's a good look?
I think he does. I think it is a good look. We'll all be dressed like that very soon.
High waistband, leather gloves.
Leather gloves. Fantastic.
Extraordinary.
Nice moustache.
Clearly, did you see his supposed boo as he went off? That man's got a sense of humour. There was a real twinkle in his eye as he went out. And I apologise, Cardiff fans. It's not that I'm undervaluing what he's done to the club, but at the same time, he's also financed the return to the Premier League. So it's a difficult issue. As Jamie says, there are two sides to every story. No two ways about it.
I think if I was a Cardiff fan, I would rather be in the Championship without Vincent Tan than be in the Premier League with him in the helm. Well, I think I'd nearly prefer to be in League One without him than in the Premier League.
Do you know what? You're probably right, Barry. Can I just finish off this little Tan section? Although you've got, James, something you want to pitch him?
I think it's win-win for Tan if he says there's a lot of money to spend in January, because if they don't spend it, he can say the manager came in on the budget, unlike McKayan.
Right.
Yeah, reputation enhanced.
He's apparently got some ideas about who they should sign. Anybody with the number 8 in their birth date. Apparently he has told the club's board he wants them to buy players with the number 8 in their birth date.
He should sign me.
Perhaps, James, perhaps.
Why?
I imagine that number 8 has some special significance in terms of bringing good fortune. Okay. I'm not sure. Huh. I like the colour red, of course. Right. Anyway, we haven't mentioned Everton Southampton. You did a bit, didn't you, in passing, Marcus? Can we tick that box? Everton winning without Gareth Barry, without Tim Howard. Jagielka now out for an extended period as well. They're going to be at Stoke midweek.
I think they're playing brilliantly.
They're back in the top four.
Everyone's talking about all the other teams being title contenders. And I must admit, they probably won't go on to win it. But why aren't we talking about Everton in that bracket? They look unbeatable at home. They've already claimed some big scores.
Sunderland beat them at home.
That was after a sending off. And it was interesting that Poyet said that Everton are Poyet said after the Everton game, despite Everton having played with 10 men, that they were the best side they've played so far this season.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, they'll look back on that result against Sunderland if they don't finish in the top four and miss out narrowly. It's just major facepalm, isn't it? Because they shouldn't have lost that game.
All right, Sunderland only 2 points now from safety. Very exciting enough. And we'll talk more about the whole relegation business after another bit of music here. Right, well, the next part of the show has got all sorts of relegation stuff coming up, and we mentioned Fulham taking on West Ham. That's a big game. West Ham coming off another disappointing result for them, a 3-3 draw at West Brom, which, to be fair, the biggest disappointment about was that Nicolas Anelka business. I'm sure we all saw this. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce the French name for the gesture.
Canel,
he did.
I think it is.
Is it?
I think so, yeah.
But, yeah, I think this is something that most people will have thought, hang on, what's that? Because he did that A thing. Do you remember back in the day when he did that A? I thought, this is another... I didn't know anything about this. And the more, over the last 2 days, been reading more and more, absolutely astonishing that he's done this.
Yeah.
And he claims, really unfortunate for his... the caretaker, Keith Downing at West Brom, that he says, it's nothing political about it, it's just a gesture for his mate. But I mean, everyone, I'm sure, if you haven't read lots about it, you should, I think. He claims that there's no political message, but there's no way, I think, you can offer support for the comedian, inverted commas, in question, a man who's been convicted on 8 offences of anti-Semitism, and not realise... A message of support for him is in tantamount to a message of support for anti-Semitism.
Yeah, because if you're expressing solidarity for someone in trouble, you have to ask what they're in trouble for.
Right.
This guy's in trouble for anti-Semitism.
Yeah, it's a really, really horrible business as well.
I know Philippe Auclair was absolutely appalled by it. I think the absolute best thing you could say on Anelka's behalf is he's guilty of being really stupid, you know, but I think it's more sinister than that, you know, and he's not a stupid man, so he must know that it is a tacit endorsement but if he's close of, personal of anti-Semitism.
Friends, right.
And the fact that you're mates with an anti-Semite yeah. is not great either, is it? You know, I'd rather not be buddies with racists or whatever. And yeah, it's just very unpleasant. And Sam Allardyce would probably be delighted by it because it sort of takes some of the heat off
well,
him.
That's true.
Because it was another poor performance from West Ham.
It'll be really interesting to see what kind of measures are taken against it because there's a lot of movement in France as well. The French government seem to be mobilising against it, and I can only imagine the Premier League or the FA are going to come down with a very, very major fine or ban indeed.
You think so? And if Wilshere was given two games for his one-fingered salute, I mean, this is a completely different level, I think.
Yeah, well, it seems to be the case that he's going to get a minimum five-game ban, but I think it could finish him in this country and signal the end of his West Brom career and career in England and possibly career altogether.
It is in some respects an interesting Premier League curiosity, isn't he, in the sense that earlier in that day he'd scored for his sixth different Premier League team. And, you know, before the furore came out about the gesture, you had his teammate Saïd Berahino saying, it's great to play alongside Nico, he's great to train with. That was what was said also whilst he was at Juventus last year. A lot of players like Quagliarella, Vucinic, and said they enjoyed playing and training with him. They thought they learnt a lot off him, even though he didn't play a lot. And, you know, I mean, for a guy who has the reputation that he does in France, Anelka has been often the source of controversy. You think of the 2010 World Cup when he told Domenech to go and himself. Yeah, he doesn't do himself any favours, which, you know, is for someone who's actually scored a lot of goals and has been involved in some, you know, great title wins. You think of Arsenal back in 98, and you think of more recently Chelsea. It's a very up and down career for him.
Hmm.
I also find it interesting that managers seem to just leap to the defence of their players, whatever they do. And I don't know how much Dan knew and what he knew when he came out and said that. Why not just say, I don't know really what happened, I don't know enough about the gesture at the moment, rather than just coming out and defending him like Liverpool did with Suarez and stuff like that. It's just they seem to go for that straight away rather than finding out more about the thing.
Well, as you say, Barry, it does rather deflect attention from Big Sam's position at West Ham.
Well, I think West Ham have only won one of their last 10 games in the league, is that correct? And they're right, well, second from bottom, right in the mess. And I remember a few weeks ago, Marcus commissioned myself and Paul Doyle to come up with a list of managers who were, you know, in danger of possibly losing their jobs. And
how many of them have gone?
Can't remember, to be honest, but Malcolm Mackay was certainly on the list, and but we included Big Sam, and a lot of readers thought it was preposterous to include him. Admittedly, we also included Jose Mourinho, and that was preposterous with the benefit of 2020 hindsight. But Big West Ham's owners are quite loyal to their managers, but they're in big trouble and not playing at all well.
Two questions then. What's going to happen when Fulham host West Ham on Wednesday? And secondly, where is Mackay going to go? Because there's at least three clubs where he could conceivably land up in quite short notice. Norwich, possibly. A lot of people still linking him with Norwich. He's a former Norwich player, isn't he? I think.
Yes.
West Brom is certainly linked with, and West Ham too.
I think there's been talk about there being a contractual issue with Tan still and that he might not take a job until the summer, which I think would possibly make sense. And on that, I think Solskjaer, I can't see him going to Cardiff. I could see him going to West Brom, but they seem to be looking elsewhere.
Mm. All right. And what about Fulham against West Ham then?
Impossible to call almost. They are playing so badly, both of them. I don't know what could possibly happen.
I would, if I had to have a bet on it, which I wouldn't, I would go for West Ham to win that one.
Really?
Yeah, but not with any huge amount of conviction.
Right. We really don't know, listeners. We really don't know.
Could be an awful draw.
Could be, couldn't it?
Could be a massively entertaining draw as well, or a slapstick annihilation for one of the sides. You know? It's just genuinely very hard goal.
Right, okay. How about Sunderland, Aston Villa? You're confident there, Barry?
I am, yeah. From what I've seen of Villa and from what I've seen of vaguely resurgent Sunderland, I would say at the moment Sunderland are probably the better side.
There you go.
Even though they're
Sunderland
are 6 points behind.
Sunderland at home, although Villa's record away from home is not as dreadful as it is at home, but your record at home's terrific, isn't it?
Well, Villa actually concede a lot away from home. They've conceded at least two in each of their last four, and they haven't won any of their last five games, home or away. But they are, however, undefeated in their last five games against Sunderland.
Are they? Are they really?
I think they miss the injured Ron Vlaar, don't they, at centre-back? They look very kind of raw in defence. It was shocking against Swansea at home. To be the home side and give your opponent, what, 73% possession?
Wow.
I mean, even against Swansea, who, you know, renowned for keeping the ball, it was still a bit of a poor showing from Villa.
Absolutely.
You have two teams there who bought poorly, I think, in the summer. They both bought in a lot of players with no Premier League experience, and a lot of these players have turned out to be not good enough to play in the Premier League, or certainly not good enough yet, anyway.
Jose Altidore, you think you're?
Well, at least he's getting a game for Sunderland. I don't rate him, to be honest. Some do. I think he's
Was a sizeable miss that he came up with.
I thought Barini played well until, unfortunately, he had to go to hospital, didn't he, in the interval, because he collapsed.
Lack of sugar
and tiredness.
He bonked. Yeah. I would call that bonking.
It is bonking. Tour de France, bonking. Yeah.
All right. Now, what about Crystal Palace against Norwich? The incredible Tony Pulis came within a whisker of getting a point there away at the Etihad, and I think had the narrowest defeat of any visitor to the Etihad. So well done him, and they are, as we mentioned, outside the bottom three now, but only by goal difference, and hosting a Norwich side who were narrowly beaten themselves against Man United.
Playing well, yeah, as well, especially in the first half. They played really well, should have led probably by a goal or two. I think Palace are playing better than Norwich, and I can see them winning. And Norwich, you get the feeling you play well against one of the top teams, you think you've done really well, and then normally teams go and then lose heavily in the next game against a worse side.
Right. Just psychologically, they're not as up for it. Right.
I think so.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Man United, who looked anything but convincing in that first half at Carrow Road, are involved in what would be the kind of marquee fixture of the New Year's Day.
Yeah, Spurs at home. Interesting again. I think Spurs now, they're all talking about being freer, playing with more freedom under Sherwood, being less hesitant, being less worried about things going wrong, and Stoke were woeful, so that might not have been the best test. But I think that would be a really open game at Old Trafford, and United weren't good at Norwich. There's no creativity whatsoever, really, and apart from that Welbeck goal, they didn't create much.
Indeed. What do you think about the Spurs' chances there at Old Trafford? They won there last year, didn't they?
I think so. I mean, everyone since Sherwood was appointed, I think, is waiting for him to be kind of found out, don't they? Because they look at the teams he's naming, and usually as soon as they come out, people like to think, what? Are you seriously going to play? I mean, this weekend it was Eriksen out wide. He didn't have his best game. I mean, the defence, you looked at that. I think they had Zeki Fries at fullback and Carl Norton on the other side. And you just thought, this isn't going to happen. And yet they win 3-0. Mm. And they were very sort of convincing in terms of the attacking fluency that they've got. He seems to have unleashed the attacking potential that we all know Spurs have. I mean,
right.
They scored three goals in their last in each of their last two of their last three games, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think they can certainly cause United some problems, as they did at Old Trafford last season under AVB, where they sort of lifted that hex. But you know, I don't know what to make of this Spurs or Sherwood yet. I just don't. You know.
Right, this will be an interesting test. We'll know a lot more about Spurs after this game. Do we know what to make of Man United, Barry? They've won their last six in all competitions. They've moved up to sixth. They are now 3 points off the top four and eight still from the top of the table.
And yet, they've been pretty unconvincing. Yeah. And their midfield...
Mark of champions.
Well, yeah. Well, you could say the same about Chelsea, couldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that's true.
Their midfield is a mess. Kagawa was horrendous last time out, and it looks like it's not going to happen for him over here, doesn't it? And it's a huge concern for them, and they really need to get people in January to fix things.
Are you calling a big transfer window for David Moyes, do you think?
Yeah, I'd say
there's no
make...
Rooney. How long is he going to be out for?
I don't think it's too long, is it?
No, because I think it's a relapse of an injury suffered in mid-December and came back and played through that. So I think the expectation is he'll come back and play through it again.
Right. So what you're saying is he had an injury, he came back and immediately relapsed. To me, that suggests that they got a long-term problem there.
I think it's more because he can kind of play through it. In an ideal world, without a congested Christmas fixture list, he'd give him 2 weeks rest. But I think they were managing his injury by not playing him against Norwich, I think,
right?
Rather than it being like a Robin van Persie injury. Where
okay, so you'd expect it to be back in for him to be back in. Did I call him it? You'd expect him to be back in for the game against Spurs. A pulsating tie, I've seen this described, which is the impression of people in red noses with those things that whiz round and round, but I don't think that's what they mean in this case.
I think when United have played these games so far this season, they've been quite cagey, haven't they? You think of the Arsenal game, the Chelsea game. And yeah, it's been about United shutting the other team down rather than playing sort of free-flowing football. So again, from that perspective, you know, it might play into Tottenham's hands if they just throw everything at them.
It's an interesting tactical battle, that.
I could foresee a draw, say maybe a 2-2 draw, which isn't going to be much use to either team and won't tell us a great deal.
Right.
And be entirely useless for everyone.
Right. They're both on 34 points coming into this opening game of 2014. Do you know, we're exactly halfway through the season. Would you like to, Marcus, call the relegation battle and the title race, since we're halfway through?
Why not? I think City will win the title.
Right.
I think Pellegrini has a really good mix. I think he's shown himself to be a good manager. I think I liked the fact that he dropped Hart. I don't think Mancini would have done that. Mm. Hart has come back a much better goalkeeper. And that's the kind of tough calls you need to make. I think so. City will win. And going down, I think Cardiff will sink. I think Fulham will go down as well, and possibly West Brom.
All right, James.
I think City will win the title. I just think they've got too much. I think they can make up for what weaknesses they have by just outscoring anyone. And relegation battle, I can't see Fulham getting out of this sort of downward spiral that they're in. Likewise, unless we see a marked change in what West Ham are doing, i.e. they get a striker in January, or Andy Carroll does have a fully fit final 4 months of the season, I think they might go down. I think Cardiff, just because of the instability there, or maybe West Brom.
It's a tough one between them two. Thing about Man United, just going back to them for a second, is the fact that, of course, David Moyes, and we have mentioned this before, but it's worth remembering the way that presumably it's the way he sets up his whole kind of fitness program, and there've been a lot of complaints about that, but his Everton team consistently did really, really well in the second half of the season after very disappointing starts. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Man United are going to perform in much the same way in the second half of the season.
Are you suggesting they could win the title?
Well, I think there's some strong teams between them and the top spot, but I think they could certainly roar back into the top four without too much bother. I mean, they're only 3 points away, so by now it's looking...
I still don't know whether they've given themselves too much to do. I mean, they are only two points behind Liverpool, who, of course, were top at Christmas.
Yeah.
And
things can change so very fast.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of people are quick to rule Liverpool out of this now. But, I mean, you look at who they've played. You know, they've been away to everyone in the top eight apart from Manchester United. So they'll have all of those teams coming to Anfield in the second half of the season, which they might have some advantage in that respect.
And no Europe, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, the way things can change so quickly. A couple of weeks ago, I think the last podcast I was on, I said the jig was up for Sunderland, that they couldn't see them getting out of their pickle, and now I don't think they will go down.
Right.
For me, Cardiff, Fulham, West Ham to get relegated, and City to win the title.
There you go. All right, then. Well, listeners, that's probably enough for today, and indeed for 2013. We'll be back on Thursday, January the 2nd, after all those midweek games and with a FA Cup round, I think, coming up on the weekend. So that'll be interesting. So it's many, many thanks to Marcus Christensen. Have a very happy new year. You too, Barry Glendening.
Many happy returns.
And Mr. James Horncastle, you too. We'll be back on Sunday. We've got Juve Roma coming up, haven't we? That's a huge game.
Top of the table clash.
Top of the table clash. First v second in Serie A. Wow. Where can we watch that, James?
It's a place called BT Sport.
BT Sport, right. Okay. Thanks, producer Ben. Thank you, listeners. Many happy New Year's to you all. And we'll see you on Thursday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.